You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products, with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio, here on 860 AM, serving Philadelphia and the entire tri-state area. Now, you can also listen to us from anywhere in the world by going to AmericanWorkersRadio.com and click on the Listen Live link. Well, we have a lot of great things to discuss today, but as always, I ask that you go first to your telephone, invite family members and friends to tune in. If you receive the email, send that email out to them so we'll be able to make sure that we keep our family of listeners continuing to grow. We have with us today Larkin Connolly, the East Coast Vice President of SCORE, Rich Logis, the principal of RJL Technology Integration. Our engineer on board is Henry Chaplinsky, and I'm Michael Blihash, your Saturday host. Mark is on a little bit of a travel, so we hope to hear from him at some point during today's broadcast. But do mention our broadcast to family and friends. It was certainly a very interesting week. We talked about so many things with tourists in historic Philadelphia. Of course, the 4th of July was a great success. We celebrated, especially here in Philadelphia, where it all began, with parades and all sorts of Independence Day concerts and many, many activities in the communities. We really went out of our way this year to celebrate the 240th anniversary of Independence Day. And I believe that the people in America have got the message loud and clear that we have to do something to change our situation in America, because no one is going to change it for us. And I also want to thank the many people that I had the chance to meet with during the last 2 weeks who tell me that they tune into the program either live on air on 860 or on the internet. That's really a very important sign to me, because it lets me know that there's interest in the broadcast, there's interest in the opinions of the people on our panel, and there's also a growing number of people who want to be involved in the Buy American Made campaign because they see that it will benefit their families, their brothers, their sisters, and, you know, it's the only way it's going to happen. Their neighbors, now that we have people starting to see the aftermath of what happened with the recession and all, we have to keep that mindset going. It's like news. News happens today. By tomorrow, people forget it, and they have a mindset just to let it go. In a week, they're even hard to ask them what exactly happened and where it was and who it was. But our broadcast, our panel, and all of you that are our soldiers in the field, speaking up where you shop, certainly make this broadcast and what we're doing very important to the community. And people are showing me when they stop by the museum and all, they show me their shoes and their clothing and different things that they have American-made labels. So there are a number of products around. It's just a matter of getting them more widely circulated. As Larkin says, we have to increase the supply chain. Now, as you know, everyone, this has been a very interesting week. Very, very interesting few days. Yesterday, I believe, was extremely interesting, and we can't let this go by. So I am going to ask Rich for what he thought happened in the last few days that really brought attention to what's taking place in America. Good morning, Dr. Richard.
Good morning, Michael, Larkin, and Mark, wherever you may be, and our listeners. And I hope everyone had a wonderful, safe 4th. And I appreciate you, Michael, starting, thank you, with this topic. I have a lot to say about it. But the thing that I'll start with is, in my opinion, I think yesterday was a very, very, very historically sad day for our country. And there is no other conclusion that I can come to, except to say that I'm not sure that our government really serves in its current, with its current membership, that it serves any real useful function anymore, except to kleptocratically enrich itself through the financial and freedom expense of its citizenry. If our listeners go and check out that word kleptocracy, which is often used in the context of another term called the banana republic, not the clothing line, not the clothing line, and you look up the word kleptocracy, you'll see what it is, people using government corruption to enrich themselves. And at our, when we think about the role of government in our lives, and we think about what government is really supposed to do, I like Senator from Kentucky Rand Paul's approach. He talks about government should be as small as possible that you barely see it. And while I certainly agree with him in principle, government's role is to enforce laws, keep our country safe. If you look at those two things, our government is failing at both of them. And because they're failing at both of them, we have a true and genuine historic constitutional crisis at the highest level of our law enforcement. And the thing is, guys, when you have a crisis at the highest level of law enforcement, where do you turn to? Where do you turn at that point? Where do you go? This isn't local corruption where you weed out the people. Excuse me, the state comes in, maybe the feds come in. You're talking about the highest level, Michael, of our law enforcement. And I watched that press conference yesterday with James Comey, and I watched him for nearly 20 minutes lay out the case that all of us knew was true. We all knew it. Only to say, by the end, nothing to see here, move on. And that was it, Michael. And that was it.
It was what was said during those first 15 or 20 minutes that was almost unbelievable, for the finale to be what it was.
Now, Larkin, all of us were texting last night, and Larkin, I'll let Larkin pick up on this, because Larkin said, sad but predictable. Unfortunately, yes. Unfortunately, yes. What is really unfortunate, excuse me, and really, really unnerving is the overall recklessness and lawlessness and just nonchalance over these issues that are of grave and utmost importance, Michael, in our country. You know, when laws aren't enforced, when you have law and order problems, Made in America doesn't even matter. It doesn't even matter at that point, Michael. What difference does it make? And we are right now embroiled in a true constitutional crisis. The question for everybody, Michael, in this country right now, for everyone, is how deep in it, how serious do you think this problem really is? If people think, well, Rich, you know, just you're exaggerating, you know, don't worry, we'll be all right, you know, Joe, don't worry about it. See, Michael, if people believe that, in my opinion, I think they're gravely mistaken to have that attitude. That's what I think. Now, that's my opinion. That's in a nutshell. I got a lot more to say about it, but in a nutshell, that's what I think about it. And I open the floor to Larkin.
Larkin, I'd like to hear what you have to say.
Good morning, Michael and Rich and Henry. Michael, I'd like you to look across through that booth and see if Henry's got a tan. I hope he does.
He does. He does.
Good, good. So he got some very, very well-earned rest. Very interesting circumstances yesterday. I was mystified by Comey. First of all, I was kind of amazed that the FBI was making a ruling. I was kind of confused between law enforcement and the Justice Department. It got me a little bit confused there. But when Rich texted me last night, my answer back to him was very, very curt. You know, it's too bad, but it was very predictable. We knew that Gerald Ford was not going to prosecute Dick Nixon because the country didn't need that. We just didn't need that kind of constitutional challenge. The Constitution had been challenged for what Dick Nixon did, and it responded, and he resigned in disgrace, the first president to do so, and he retired to California pretty much a broken man. We didn't need another 3 years of dragging a former president through the Supreme Court. I'm not so sure how a presidential candidate could be drugged through the courts or could be held accountable for these actions. I think it's very sad that, my first comment to myself was, wait a minute, did she not say in the Senate subcommittee hearing that she did not send any top secret, she did not send any emails of any effect whatsoever, period, amen. Well, I said to myself, why isn't anybody calling to account the fact that at that point, Hillary Clinton was under oath? She not only lied to the country, she purged herself. And and we are in a position now of just saying, well, that's Hillary. That's just what you're going to get. I mean, she lied directly to our face. I did not have sex with that woman. It was a direct look into the camera and lied. And somewhere along the line, our leadership isn't held accountable for such actions. And I think it's a very, very sorry day for our country. Do I think that she committed a crime? Do I think she maliciously went out and shared emails with people? No. No. The thing, it probably would have gone away if she would have said, listen, I got caught up in this thing, or made some admission, which she did later when she realized that the evidence was all over the place. I just screwed up. But at the time that her character was responsible for making a statement to the American people under the auspices of an oath to a Senate subcommittee, she lied. More than once, she lied. Now we're going to ascend her, and again, I take no sides in this race, none whatsoever. I'm not voting for Hillary or against Hillary or for Trump or against Trump. I think our current circumstances are extremely sad that this is our choice. But at some point, one has to be accountable for one's actions. And, it's so Clinton to have Bill Clinton approaching the head of the Justice Department, the most powerful justice person in the country, the Attorney General, on a tarmac and having a conversation. We just talked about our children.
Yep.
Yeah, really?
You know, really? All this happened the day after the 4th of July. In fact, I thought about that when I was driving down the expressway. I said, 240 years ago on the 4th, we signed the Declaration to get away from foreign people telling us what to do in this country. Today, we're watching people in this country not only lie to us, but tell us what to do, how to spend our money, overtax us, watch our businesses run. What's happening here with this issue is a perfect example what happened to our industries, our jobs. Political leaders were paid money under the table, on the table, behind closed doors, in front of doors that were opened, and they sold America for dollars rather than supporting America. And this happened the day after the 4th of July. I don't think we have heard anything on our local stations that had any kind of praise for what happened yesterday. It's a sad day in American history. Yes, Rich.
Michael, a few things, and to what Larkin you said. Now, Larkin, you just said accurately, right? This is what we've come to expect with Clinton. What I say to people, and I will say it on this show, Hillary Clinton lies the way a serial killer kills. It is a normal, there's no cerebral buffer in the brain. There's no cognitive alarm that sounds to say, I'm in another lie. Just like that alarm doesn't sound for a serial killer. Now, perhaps, Michael, some of our listeners who are better trained in psychology or psychiatry or those fields could speak a bit more intelligently about this. So, Larkin, I'm not putting words in your mouth, but what I just heard you say, if I didn't know you and I knew nothing else but what was going on, and I heard you say those things, what I heard is we have a crisis on our hands. And, Michael, this is an important point that I have to make. We just celebrated July 4th. Our founders understood that the murder of the Republic was more likely to come from within than from abroad.
Right.
From within. Now, here's the thing, as to my earlier point, if we reasonably agree government's supposed to uphold the laws and keep us safe, I think those are two things, Larkin, that most people, regardless of how big you think government should or should not be, those are two things reasonably we can say government should do. It's failing in both. It's failing in both, Michael, because you have a crisis from within. And then we also have invaders, whom we call refugees. Now, in history, the way that invaders typically invaded, see, Michael, if we think about our Polish ancestors, right? And I share this with you and many of our members and listeners. Hitler came in September 1st, 1939. He rolled a tank right into Poland from Germany. That's how typically military invasions happen. There's a tank. There's an act of aggression. There's some military strike. Here today in our country, we're rolling the red carpet out for the invaders, and we're housing them, feeding them, bathing them, and clothing them. Do you guys understand the insanity that is happening right now? That's the question. How serious are people going to take what is occurring in this country right now? And, you know, Michael, I understand for good reason why a lot of people, I understand this sentiment, I understand why a lot of people, they say, you know, Rich, we'll come out of it, we'll make it out ahead. Can we really ask that question now and have the same confidence today that we may have had, Larkin, 10, 20, 40, 50 years ago? Can we really say that, ask that question and answer it that as confident as we once did? In my opinion, no, we can't. So if we have a crisis on our hands, what are we going to do about it? Are we going to finally wave the white flag, Michael, and say, okay, I give up. People are above the law. Let's go and just become dependent on government like all the other commie societies throughout the history of the world. Or are people going to say, we're drawing the line today, and it's enough? Unfortunately, Michael, I can't answer that question for people. That's up for people to decide what it is that they want to do.
I agree with you, Rich. And in talking with the people over the 4th of July, many of the Americans of many generations have had it. I don't know what they're going to do. I talked about registering to vote. I heard people are registered to vote as independents. I can't believe how many people have registered as independents over the years. I believe now we're up to around 40%. Is that true, Larkin? 40% of the voters are now independently registered across the USA. I mean, with that in mind, those people are just saying, I am going to go out on election day, and I would like the people to really go out and make a choice between one candidate or the other.
Michael, independents haven't had their day in the sun yet, though.
That's right.
Because in 38 states, it's a closed primary.
Right. And the people that I met told me, well, I wasn't able to vote, and I wasn't about to change my registration because I didn't want to be on either one of the tickets.
And Michael, I want to say one point. If Donald Trump is elected in November, it is going to be much, much more because of independents than because of the Republican Party. Is that not sad? Let me tell you guys something, a point that I made before. I think the majority of the RNC and the Republican Party, again, not all members, the majority of them, if Clinton were to be elected, they'll wake up the day after in their Washington, D.C. mansion, covered by walls and gates, take their chauffeured car to send their kids to the private school, and then they'll go to work with their armed guards. And they'll say, well, the people have spoken. Let's compromise.
That's right. That's exactly how it works.
So the independents of this country have never been more powerful than they are right now. And I can, and I'm in that group. I put myself, Michael, into that group as whom I call an independent.
There is nothing, Rich, by the way, there is nothing that is of concern to national leaders at this point. Not the student loan crisis.
Michael, excuse me. There are concerns. The concerns are, how do we enrich ourselves at the expense of the people? How do we get reelected? How do I call Larkin and say, hey, Larkin, I need to have a $15,000 a plate fundraiser at your and Joe's house. You got room for me? Yeah, come on in, Rich. Come right in. Let's go talk about how America is the bastion of freedom, and we need to spread democracy around the world. And let's talk about the American worker and all the other crap that they talk about, Michael, while they go back to their work and say, how am I enriching myself today?
Yeah.
That's the answer. That's what they do. And they do that well.
And you know, Rich, you're absolutely right, because, you know, through all this election, pre-election process, and we're now on the doorstep of two major party elections, one in Philadelphia, one in Ohio. And I hear very little concern about the American people. It's all distractions. Do you agree with that, Larkin?
I don't think there's any question, Michael. I think that the rise of the independent party is an indication of the disgust of the American people with the Republicans and Democrats. And, you know, it's hard to argue about that, because both sides have just let the country down. I mean, absolutely let the country down. And they don't collaborate with each other anymore. They don't decide that they're going to play the old give and take to get things done. They don't vote. You know, I said this last week or the week before, and it still kind of amazes me. When I had dinner with a 24-year served congressman, I said, "What's the difference?" And he said, "Well, politicians all of a sudden," in so many words he said, "politicians all of a sudden are intrigued with being able to get FaceTime on television and become popular and become a world figure just because they're a congressman. What they throw to the wind is any knowledge of how their own constituents would vote if, in fact, a vote was called on a particular subject. Now, all of a sudden, it's the Republican Party en masse countrywide. There's not a Southern bloc or a Western bloc or a Northeast bloc that holds together saying our constituents don't want this. They don't want it because they don't go home to find out."
You're right. And also because they don't go home to find out. They don't ride down the streets where people live. They don't ride down the highways where many of the industries are closed. They really have no idea what is happening in the towns and cities and states across America. I have seen more. Larkin, you do a lot of traveling, and I'm sure that in your travels, you look over and you say, wow, I never believed that was be closed. Look at how many buildings I passed. I urge people all the time, when you're riding down a highway, just count the number of for sale and for lease signs and wonder, what would America be like if all those places were filled once again? Because they weren't just built for the fun of it. They were buildings that housed industries, offices that are now vacant. Just like our congressmen and our local leaders as well, don't have any idea what to do to bring those jobs back. They talk about taxes and everything else, but there's no interest whatsoever as to how the people are going to work to pay those taxes.
You know, it sounds as though, and I don't want it to sound as though this is pick on Hillary Day, because I don't mean to do that, but it could very easily be picked on Donald Day, because he certainly gives everybody enough fodder and enough material to do so. But I see things like this happen, and nobody in the press call Hillary to task. I hear her say with a straight face to the American electorate, you know what? My husband is going to be the job czar when I become president. That's it. Whoa, 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 whoa. Time out. Time out. It was more than just Bill Clinton. It was probably a lot of presidents since played a different role in it. But guess what? Bill Clinton sold this country down the pike when it came to jobs.
Yep.
NAFTA was the opening of the original well of let's get the jobs out of here and try to convince America that we're in a world economy. Yeah, well.
The globalization is really what killed America, because, and once again, America's politicians, who are supposed to be the paid leaders that we elect and send to Washington, they didn't take into consideration what are the American people going to do to earn a dollar to support themselves and pay the taxes if we permit these agreements to take 50% or more of the jobs from our industries overseas. And once it started, it's like a tumbleweed. It just continued. Well, if I can do it, they did it. They're making more money. No aggravation. Now people are looking at their checkbooks. They're looking at their savings account and saying, what the hell is going on? And by the way, the last 5 years, we've been talking about student loans in America. It's now the biggest nightmare that we've had in this country. Students are contacting not only Bernie, but they've contacted Hillary and everyone else that's running on a local level, state senators and all, to discuss what are we going to do to end this crisis. So do you know how they ended the crisis? You may have heard it announced 2 days ago. They're going to reduce the loan interest rate by 0.5%. Did you hear that, Richard?
Yeah, I've heard it, Michael, and I've heard...
So that they say they addressed the issue. The one guy said to me yesterday, we did address the issue. 0.5%, the interest rate was dropped. That is a success.
People Larkin's point, people, those I meet who are, which I'm not saying this is what you said or did, Larkin, people who are incredulous over why Clinton and progressives are not held to account, it's because they've infiltrated with 95% depth media and Hollyweird and social media and schools and universities. They've just infiltrated them. That's what they've done. Everywhere the youth are. See, Michael, we had Adam on. Very impressive young man. Guys, people who were listening to my show said, "Oh, we got to get Adam back on again," right? And I said, "Absolutely, we'll get him back on." So if Adam's listening, Adam, welcome.
He is. He's down in the museum.
All right.
Today.
Well, you know, don't let Michael catch you not working, Adam. So the fact of the matter is, where are these people? Where have they gone to? Everywhere the youth are. Everywhere Adam's peers are. These people are there. But you see, Michael, this is the thing. This is what I see as the crisis. that's not the end game. The final piece of the puzzle isn't the schools, universities, social media, media, entertainment, Hollyweird. The last piece of the puzzle, the last piece of the transformation. What did Obama say in 08? We're going to transform the country. What's the final piece of it all? I'll tell you what it is. It's our Constitution. That's what it is. Not through amendments. Who wants to waste time with that? That's boring. Here's how you do it. You do it through the courts. And I can't, for the life of me, guys, figure out why we don't talk, not we collectively, but when I listen to news reports, politicians, we don't talk anywhere near as much as about the issue of federal judicial appointments that we should. Supreme Court is obviously very important. The next president may have four Supreme Court appointments, okay, if that president is in for 8 years. But beyond the Supreme Court, you have federal judicial appointments. You have 1,200 federal judges throughout the country. Well, in the next 8 years, I bet quite a few of those guys and women, Larkin, are going to retire. And you know why federal judicial appointments are really important? Because a ruling, Michael, in Pennsylvania can affect me and Larkin and Jim Austin in Florida. It can affect Mark Andel up in New York. It can affect all of us. So the presidential election, for all of the carnival and circus atmosphere it's had, yeah, it's had that. After all is said and done and the confetti is cleared up, the office of the presidency has a tremendous amount of influence on the kinds of laws that we are going to be subject to. And do you guys think, I mean, you're talking about the progressive left. They're radicals. I mean, they are flat-out radicals. You don't think the kinds of judges they'll seek to put in there, Michael, are not going to be reflective of their ideologies? Are we really that naive to think that? See, Larkin, you said a few weeks ago about compromise. I want to tell you, I agree with you in principle, but those days are over. There is no compromise. I want someone who listens to this show to explain to me how and where the compromise and negotiation comes from with a group of people who call you Hitler when you suggest that we should be America first. I want someone, Michael, to tell me how you negotiate with that group. Tell me.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know.
That's
I want someone to line up for me and say, well, Rich, here's how you compromise with a group of people who call you an Islamophobe, xenophobe, racist, bigot, homophobe, Hitler, Nazi, Mussolini when you suggest our borders should be secure. I think I got all of them. Did I miss any? Xenophobe, racist, bigot, homophobe, misogynist, Hitler, Nazi, Mussolini. I think I got them all. I'd like to know where the compromise comes from. When you guys figure it out, let me know.
Yeah, well, see, well, go ahead, Larkin. I need to hear your opinion today.
Well, Rich, you make a good point. It's a touch, to me, at this point, radical. I think I have a little bit more faith. They certainly haven't earned much of my faith, but I have a little bit more faith in the system that our democracy can and will work. But my preference is to say, how low is it going to get? How bad is it going to get before we do what is necessary to affect the republic? Before we do what's necessary to turn things around? At what point do we say it's not right that way? And listen, it's a political issue. Hillary Clinton could have a come to the voter meeting, very similar to another presidential candidate who did the same thing, and she can hold it in the at Constitution Center and have everybody there and make a very compelling speech about, you know, I have made some mistakes, but I'm human like everybody else. I don't know what she could say. I'm sure she's got speechwriters and strategists that could come up with some approach that would put her back in favor or at least feed enough to her base that say, oh, okay, everything's okay, we're back to normal. She's kind of cleaned everything up. I know that's weak.
But Larkin, that is exactly what I thought was going to happen yesterday when I heard the report. I thought after he said all that he said about the whole investigation, how they went through the emails and everything else, I thought that she would have come on air and said, I feel very badly that this took place. I will say this, people of America, that I should have known better, my advisor should have known better, and I would, you know, make sure in the future, if I become president, that the rules and regulations of governing any office that is appointed or elected is well known. But instead, it just was like business as usual, walked away and forgot about everything.
Well, she actually appeared on stage right after that announcement with Obama down in, with President Obama down in Charlotte, North Carolina, and I guess they haven't fashioned an answer yet. I'm not sure, but she didn't say a word.
But that she should have already, you know, any person of prominence should have a plan A, what I say in case he says this, and a plan B. I would have done a mea culpa on the spot if I was her. I really didn't realize. I was so overcome by the job, the constant daily things that were happening. I would have cleaned it up much better than she did. She, in fact, slapped the people in the face by not doing that.
She has to become a little bit more personal. I mean, she has to become a little bit more attached to the people. And that certainly hasn't been one of her high marks in her career. She's always been kind of detached, and nobody around her seems to much care for her style. But, you know, listen, we're not in this for style. We're in this for results.
Well, you know, Larkin, as I said earlier, about 20 minutes ago, the American mindset is they hear news, they watch reaction, then they move forward. I don't believe this is going to go away through this whole election process. But if she came forward immediately and said, yes, I see now that he says this, that this was going on, I fully didn't realize or whatever, she'd be able to dance around much better. But instead, nothing. And it's not only Hillary Clinton or whoever is who's ran in the past or will run locally. The fact of the matter is they are looking out for number one. That's themselves. The story is they're not asking how is our educational system educating our young people, whether it's for the trades or to be, you know, Supreme Court justices. They're not asking that question. They're not asking questions like how are the people going to support themselves so they can support a family and pay the taxes. They're not doing that. They're not talking about how are the students going to be paying back their student loans till they're 45 and 48 years old. None of that is being discussed. It's all, you know, nonsense being distraction after distraction. This should have been addressed 6 months ago, and we really get down to the bread and butter issues that will affect America today, tomorrow, next year, and in the next five generations.
But Michael, we're back to a point that I've made before, and I'm going to stress this point, and I'm going to bang this drum for the next 4 months. Turnout, turnout, turnout. The answer to my own question and my attempt to answer it, where's the compromise coming from? I'm going to answer it this way. Let's first conquer, then we'll compromise. And what I mean by that, Larkin, is you said about a bumper. You mentioned a bumper sticker you saw. Reelect no one. I think that's what the bumper sticker was that you said.
Yep.
As I see it today, and again, just my opinion as I see things, And I'm not the expert of experts, and I preface everything by saying, guys, I'm not a historian, I'm not a historical expert. However, I would, if I may say, I do consider myself a pretty objective as a former journalist and relatively informed person, although it is a full-time job trying to keep up with the lies and cronyism. I consider myself, I've got a pretty good pulse on, I think, what's happening throughout the nation.
You know,
right now, Michael, we have a Democratic Party that, in my opinion, they've moved so far left that they're gone. You could just look at the way that Jim Webb was treated. Again, Jim Webb would have made a very good presidential candidate. He would have, because he was a little more sensible. He was a little bit more of an old-school Reagan Democrat, Larkin, and he was just, I mean, he was like run off the stage. It looked like the end of Frankenstein when everybody chases Frankenstein with the torches. I mean, Webb was just run off the stage. So you got the Democratic Party. In my opinion, they're gone. For the most part, they're gone. Then you got the Republican Party, whose attitude for the most part has been, if you can't beat them, join them. Here comes the independent uprising. Here it comes, Michael.
Mm-hmm.
So if there is going to be an election, guys, where independents once and for all are going to say, we're going to start to wield the kind of electoral power that we can have, and we go and we clean house at the highest levels of government, at that point, we come back to the table and we say, okay, where is the common ground on things? I'm not suggesting there isn't common ground to be sought and had. I'm saying I'm not as confident in it as perhaps, Larkin, you may be. But I can get more confident if I can see a turnout the likes of which we've never seen in our country's history. Now, that would be something to behold. It truly would be. So all we can do is hold out and rally people and hold out hope that it will happen. But I think, guys, I think that the evidence is suggesting that we might see a turnout that we've never seen. Larkin, whether one likes Trump or not, I'm going to ask you to address this. Whether one likes him or not, the fact of the matter is he obtained the most amount of votes in the primary. The people who decided to vote Republican chose him overwhelmingly, overwhelmingly, so overwhelmingly that Donald Trump obtained the most amount of votes in the history of the GOP primary. Like him or not, the fact of the matter is he earned those votes. He did. And nobody can take that away. And I'm telling you guys this, the Republican Party, they're not going to give Trump the kind of support that they could and they should. Those with a sense of urgency about what is happening in the United States right now need to understand something. I think for the most part, we're probably going to have to go at this alone. But historically, that's fitting. 90% of the colonies were against the American Revolution. Is that not an astounding historic fact? 90%, Michael, 90. Of the colonies was against the revolution.
Right.
90. Well, we need more than 10% today.
You know, Rich, as you're saying that, I'm thinking, you know, this could be, after this election between the two parties, this could be the beginning of a third party and a fourth party, because I think this is finally going to break the bubble. And I want everybody to know that there will not be a shot heard around the world that's going to wake up the people and get them out to vote on election day. It's now common sense. How are we going to change America with the two candidates that we have to offer? Maybe the next time we will have three candidates or four major candidates. I think this election is the most unbelievable election that we have ever seen in our lifetime and many lifetimes before ours.
It's just where politics are right now. And Michael, you haven't said anything in the last 2 months more powerful or more correct, as far as I'm concerned, than get ready, be prepared to make a decision if you're a voter who cares, because you're going to have more than two choices the next time around. There's just no question that the electorate is not going to make some magnanimous changes in the structure of this country. It has to happen, because what we're doing does not work. What we feel is important does not work. You know, Webb didn't stand a chance. It wasn't for any reason other than Hillary and Obama went nose to nose, and Obama beat her. And at some particular point, unlike our dear friend from Vermont, Hillary backed off and said, cool. Now, there was an agreement somewhere between two people, and I'm not sure which two, that said, as soon as Hillary's, as soon as Obama's term is over, if he wins even a second one, she didn't challenge him on the second one, presumptive candidate from the word go. There was a deal that, you know, okay, I'm going to hand it, but he even said it yesterday in Charlotte, which I thought was pretty amazing. He said, Hillary is ready. I am ready to hand the baton of government over to Hillary. I mean, he made that, and that's an absolute quote. So I don't know. There's just so much shenanigans, but the most important thing is that our leaders are not being held to any standard.
Yeah, I agree, Lark, and I agree with you on this point. You know, and that ultimately comes from who? From the voters, you know, from our electorate. And for too long, we've all witnessed it. I've said on this show before, I'm going to run with this play again. The number one problem in this country is how little people know. We have $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 of technology in the average home, all of which can access the internet, all of which can access communications with like-minded people. I just think as a whole, we're a nation that just doesn't really know a lot about what's happening that's important. But the silver lining in it, Larkin, is I do have a sense that that's shifting a little bit right now.
I don't know. I think you're right. Term limits is a serious problem as far as I'm concerned. There are a lot of nickel and dime issues that need to be addressed. But the main issue is that we have got to get the American public to start voting knowledgeably about issues and subjects instead of voting their wallet, instead of voting their economic position and how it can be approved by electing one person and not the other.
Yeah.
That stuff just has to stop. And there is nobody that's going to motivate that to happen that I can see anywhere on the horizon of leadership in this entire country. I don't see one individual that could step up to the plate and say, folks, listen to me very carefully and put forth a compelling argument, because we don't have statesmen anymore. We have people looking for a career in politics, and they want to stay there for 40 years, and they want to pull the most egregious pension I have ever seen in my entire life. I mean, it's just completely out of hand. So how do you address term limits? Well, you sure as hell don't address them by thinking the people who are suffering the positive consequences of there not being term limits to be the people who are going to change it.
Well, you know, Larkin, that's where I also always speak about the referendums on the ballot. I think it's starting to come about, because people tell me the term limit situation all the time. When I speak to the tourists in historic Philadelphia, when I'm out, people are said it's too many of the same old people sitting around making the same decisions to help themselves and the hell with the people. The news media is also at blame for a lot of this, Larkin. Quite frankly, how many shows are you watching at any point that are screaming, how are we going to support our young people? with jobs and a future. I don't hear anybody. They're all distracted by all this other idioticness. If one or two of those shows focused on jobs, ways to bring back, talk about what the agreements did, the trade agreements did to America, they'd have a lot of viewers. People want to know, yet they don't show any of that because bad news, they say, sells. And this little tit for tat for years and years was the way to go. But I really think next time around, we're going to see possibly three or four parties. Because I don't know if this is a fact. Maybe you know, Richard. Maybe you could look up. Rich, they said that we are nearing 50% of the new registered voters at registered independent. Have you seen that?
Well, Michael, the number I don't know, but I will tell you that the population of those who identify as independent, and of course, not all of those people are really independent. It's gotten cool to say, you know, I'm an independent. As I always like to joke in the words of George Carlin, I was saying almost 20 years ago I was an independent. I was ahead of my time, but only by about an hour and a half I was ahead. So I think that population is increasing. And the Republican Party, Larkin, and I've said it before, and I just, you know, I keep coming back to this point because there's a part of me that says, come on, guys, you can do it. The Republican Party has in front of it a great opportunity right now. And the opportunity in front of it is first off, it's got to come clean with the American public. It's got to acknowledge why has there been a problem generating turnout and interest in the party before Donald Trump? Why? This is a fair question, whether you like Trump or not. It's a fair question. It's a valid question. And the Republican Party in its leadership, which you've said it lacks leadership, and you couldn't be more right about that. But there's a prime opportunity, Michael. There's a prime opportunity to say that the Republican Party is there. If you look at the candidates, it was the Republican candidates. There was much more diversity on the stage in the Republican primary than there was on the Democrat side. There's an opportunity there. And the opportunity is we are going to do the things that we know we should do. And at the end of the day, guys, everybody knows what we should do. Uphold our laws, protect our borders, America first, our sovereignty first. Now, people will say, well, the Republican Party does that today. Well, you don't hire someone for a job, Larkin, just to get 50% effort out of them, do you? Do you hire someone to get a quarter, 25% effort? No. You hire people to get the maximum amount of effort as possible for his or her skills or your company. To go and vote is hiring someone to do a job. I just don't think that the standard of, well, this guy or woman will at least try, is good enough anymore. I mean, would any of us hire in our company and say, I'm hiring you to just try. Don't worry about results. Don't worry about you know, doing the job as well as you can. Just try. Would any of us do that in our business? Realistically. Larkin, you know the answer is no.
Well, yeah, you know, and the saddest part of the whole thing is that the country is prepared in this election, to clearly prepared, because I've heard it from both sides, clearly prepared to vote for the lesser of two evils.
Without
really?
Question. Without
we're
question.
We're going to vote for the lesser of two evils. There's not something in our fiber. There's not something in our Constitution. There isn't something in our ability to strategize where we can say, okay, this isn't what we want. This isn't what we need, and we're just not going for it.
Hey, Larkin, you sound a lot like a guy named Logis I know.
You know, Larkin, what you're saying is true, because on the 4th of July and leading up to the 4th of July, I had the opportunity to talk to a lot of the tourists in historic Philadelphia, and talking about the third party, as we touched on today, is not something people are objecting to whatsoever. The reason they're not objecting to it is I listened and they said, well, the third a ticket could also bring with them the term limit ideas, because the people are tired of this going on and on, retiring after 30 years of doing the same old, same old. We're a third party. And by the way, if we have 40% of the American people now registered as voters to come out and do their thing, after this general election, it's an opportunity for a brand new people, group of people to come forward and say, we want to do this, we need to do this, be critics of the president and the House and the Senate, and bring positive ideas as to what's going to happen to America. Urge people to support the big and small organizations and big and small employers of America. Go out and buy what they make, you know, help them make more. What's happening with these guys in Washington? They're not doing that. They don't care about the bread and butter issues. They don't really care about the little cities in America. They just don't care. It's attitude of, I don't care about you, and I'm glad you don't care about me. If you don't come out to vote, no problem.
Yeah, you know, the most frightening example of it, unfortunately, is Congress's inability to recognize the seriousness, no matter what the degree, the seriousness of the potential disaster behind the Zika virus. They have not spent one penny addressing the issue. Not one.
You know why that bill was shot down, Larkin? You know why it was really shot down? It's all in the news reports. Because there was no funding for Planned Parenthood in it. So the whole thing died.
And that's why I want every bill to stand on its own.
Is that not pathetic?
None of these three and four things snuck in together. That doesn't make sense. It needs new leadership. Another party would help make America great again. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in. I'm going to ask all of you, because this was an excellent broadcast today, I'm going to ask all of you, when Henry gets up the broadcast from today, email it to your family members and friends so that our listenership and our, you know, people supporting the Buy American Made campaign will continue to grow. Larkin, you were outstanding today. Rich, you were outstanding today. Henry, I know you're outstanding all the time, and you'll make sure that an outstanding rebroadcast goes up. My thanks to everyone who advertises on our broadcast 7 days a week. I will make sure that your advertisements are done the rest of the week, and especially during our Saturday show, when I will be with you here again at 11 a.m. on Saturday, 8:60 a.m., or you can listen from on the front page of SaturdayVarietyProgram.com. Thank you, Larkin. Thank you, Rich. Thank you, Henry. And thank you, listeners, for spreading the word. Together, we will make positive things happen in America. Best wishes to all of you, and have a great day.
Thanks, everyone.
Take care, everybody.